in other more developed societies, the societies that we are aspiring.
Well, Liliana Smilovic, we're going to have to leave it there. We thank you so much for being with us. Serbian journalists joining us from Belgrade, Serbia, where two mass shootings took place one day after another. One perpetrated by a 13-year-old student who gunned down his classmates and a guard in the school. That does it for our show. A very happy birthday to Aaron Dooley. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, Augusta Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warnoff, Tarina Nudura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astujo, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, Sanji Lopez. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Our director, Becca Staley.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Apano's Voices of Change, Deepening Ties, Growing Power, on Saturday, May 20th from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Great Room in Beaverton. It's an annual gathering of AAPI community to celebrate the past year, talk about future hopes, and be together. That's Apano's Voices of Change, Deepening Ties, Growing Power, on Saturday, May 20th from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Great Room, 15900 Southwest Regatta Lane, Suite 105 in Beaverton. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Support for this program comes from KBOO members and from the League of Women Voters of Portland, providing nonpartisan election information for the May special election at lwvpdx.org. The website has explanations of ballot measures on services for renters and for children and public safety. The League informs voters because every vote matters.
This is KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a significant heat wave hits the Northwest this weekend.
The Metro County Homeless Point-in-Time Count paints a complex picture of the homeless crisis.
And in national news, the FDA lifts its ban on blood donation by gay and bisexual men.
Good evening. This is KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 12th, 2023. I'm Danny Shy.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. Portland could see record-breaking temperatures over the weekend with weather conditions similar to the deadly heat event of 2021. That extreme weather killed 69 people in Multnomah County. Starting today, the Portland Metro could see temperatures rise into the 90s. The National Weather Service issued an excessive heat watch through Monday. The unusually hot temperatures are a result of the global climate crisis, and when they occurred 2 years ago, prompted swift action from city and local organizations, which promised to help residents deal with the heat. Some say those efforts will not be enough this time around, where the increase in temperatures is coming from a high-pressure system like the heat dome event that trapped hot air over the region in 2021. Typically, the average high is around 70 degrees in mid-May. The region has reached 90 degrees in the first half of May, just 8 times since records first were kept. The last time there were 3 consecutive 90-degree days in the first half of May was back in 1987. In response to the 2021 deaths, state, city, and local organizations began distributing air conditioning units and heat pumps, which can also cool air, and they opened up more cooling centers during extreme heat events.
The Portland Clean Energy Fund, a tax-funded grant program to fight climate change and social inequities, created a heat response program now called Cooling Portland. The program installs portable AC units or heat pumps for Portlanders whose income is less than 60% of the median household income and who are either living alone, are elderly, or have medical conditions that are more vulnerable to heat. The program's goal is to install 15,000 units by 2026. This year, their goal is 4,000. The program has opened an application process to onboard additional community-based organizations and housing providers this year, which should increase capacity. About 46% of the program's installations occurred in homes east of 82nd Avenue, a section of the city that is highly vulnerable to heat and damage from high temperatures. Oregon lawmakers are also currently debating Senate Bill 868, which would create a goal of installing 500,000 heat pumps across the state by 2030. The bill would create financial incentive programs using state and federal funds from the Inflation Reduction Act, as well as programs like the Portland Clean Energy Fund. Another possible solution could be hiring a chief heat officer, a person who addresses the effects of extreme heat and figures out ways to adapt. Only three U.S. cities have chief heat officers: Miami, Phoenix, and Los Angeles.
The point-in-time count for unhoused people in the Portland metro is out. It shows a 20% uptick in the number of unhoused people in Multnomah County compared to last year. But the county says they got better at counting the houseless population, and that's why the number is so much larger. Their data analysis shows that chronic homelessness, people who have been homeless for at least a year or repeatedly while struggling with a disability, is down 17% across the metro counties. That indicates that people who have been on the streets for a long time are getting into housing. The number of people living on the street or unsheltered rose 29% since last year. That could indicate that the cycle of eviction and homelessness is starting anew for many more people. Overall rates of homelessness in Washington and Clackamas counties decreased since 2022, 4% in Washington County and 31% in Clackamas County. The three counties agreed that money from the Metro Supportive Housing Services program, approved by voters back in 2020, helped greatly when it came to providing shelter and housing in the past year. The point-in-time count is required by the federal government and tries to measure where people slept on the night of January 24th.
Oregon State Republican lawmakers are still on their walkout over gun control, abortion protection, and gender-affirming care. It's the end of the second week of the Republicans' walkout and extremely close to the 10-day absence limit for Republican lawmakers. Voters passed Measure 113 in 2022, which caps the number of unexcused absences to 10 for lawmakers, or else they would not be allowed to run for re-election. Leaving the Senate means that the minority can deny quorum to the Democratic majority of senators, meaning no bills can move forward and nothing can get done. Oregon is an outlier among other states because it requires two-thirds of the senators to be present to conduct business instead of a simple majority. Senate President Rob Wagner canceled a floor session scheduled for today, giving the Republicans who walked out a one-day pass before hitting their limit. Privately, Wagner and the leaders from the Senate from the State House want to negotiate the Republicans' return to the State House. Senate Republicans have floated the idea that Measure 113 is unconstitutional, either for violating free speech, the right to protest, or the right to run for elective office. Legal experts say it wouldn't be likely to succeed because the Oregon Constitution allows the legislature to compel the attendance of absent members already. States also have the right to regulate their own elections, including so-called neutral candidacy qualifications.
So have you voted yet? If not, you've got a lot of company. So far, just 13% of Oregon voters have returned their ballots for the May 16th special election. Voters across the state have local and county measures to vote on, along with local offices like school boards and water district members. Ballots must be postmarked by midnight on Election Day, which is Tuesday, May 16th. Just 10% of Multnomah County voters have turned in their ballots, but that's not the lowest in the state. Umatilla County has 8.7% of their ballots turned in. The highest turnout in Wallowa County, with more than 28% of ballots returned. Special elections, May elections, and off-year elections generally have lower turnout from voters, since ballots don't often include statewide or federal offices.
A new survey finds Oregonians age 45 and older are facing pressures from the economy. They're concerned about the cost of healthcare and aging in their homes. KBOO's TK Kapura has the details.
A new survey finds older Oregonians are concerned about the cost of living in many aspects of their lives. The Vital Voices research program from AARP dives into issues that impact Oregonians 45 and older. State Director of AARP Oregon, Bandana Shrestha, says the cost of health care and housing top the list of topics on people's mind.
One big takeaway from the survey is that Oregonians are really feeling affordability and the economic pressures in all aspects of their lives.
Concern over affording healthcare expenses increased from 78% in 2020 to 91% in 2023. May is Older Americans Month. Aging in place is a priority for Oregonians, with 84% of respondents saying it's important to stay in their own home as they get older. But Shrestha says the economy presents a challenge to this.
Especially for people who rent, three quarters experience financial pressure. So if there's any rent increases, that would impact the ability to continue to remain at home.
Shrestha says political leaders are an important part of this conversation.
Whether we are talking about our public policymakers at the state or local levels, they have an important role to play in ensuring that we have the services and supports necessary to be able to thrive throughout our lifetime.
The survey shows Oregonians are also concerned about having access to the caregiving resources they need and that many feel stressed and isolated. For KBOO News and the Oregon News Service, I'm TK Kapura.
The COVID-19 public health emergency has ended, and so has Title 42 on the southern border. Plus, Florida advocates seek to enshrine constitutional abortion protections. With more on these stories, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This administration takes the threat of future surges or pandemics very seriously, which is why access to vaccine tests and treatments will remain widely available after today.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said the Biden administration will remain vigilant in pushing back against the threat of COVID-19 even as the public health emergency ends. She added the White House will call on Congress to put funds in place to ensure the U.S. is ready to take on the next major public health emergency. In April, the Department of Health and Human Services launched Project Next Gen, a $5 billion project designed to ward against surges of COVID-19 and other potential pandemic threats. With the public health emergency officially over, Title 42, which allows authorities to expel migrants from U.S. land borders for public health reasons, ends too. This comes as House Republicans passed a new border security plan, with two GOP representatives breaking ranks to vote against the measure. The plan, which faces an almost certain veto, aims to restart construction on the border wall, increase funding for border agents, reinstate the Remain in Mexico policy, and place new restrictions on asylum seekers. Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas said Title 42 is being replaced with older procedures under Title 8, which he described.
If anyone arrives at our southern border after midnight tonight, they will be presumed ineligible for asylum and subject to steeper consequences for unlawful entry, including a minimum 5-year ban on reentry and potential criminal prosecution.
A coalition of abortion rights groups are petitioning for Florida voters to vote on a constitutional amendment in 2024 after the Republican-controlled legislature and Governor Ron DeSantis approved a 6-week abortion ban. Kara Gross with the ACLU of Florida says the petition allows a person to make their own decisions without government interference.
The near total abortion ban puts Floridians at risk for their own health, and Floridians want to be able to make these decisions for themselves. They want to be able to make these decisions with the people they love and they trust and in consultation with their health care providers.
Connecticut's House of Representatives passed legislation to implement an early voting plan, including an education campaign for voters, training for registrars, and requiring 14 days of early voting before both a primary and general election. Coralie Santana with the Connecticut Project notes kinks will need to be worked out, but Connecticut voters will see the benefits of it once the plan is implemented.
It's really going to allow expanded access. We have lower turnout in the cities because people can't make it in one day. And I think we're really going to see increased participation. We're going to see shorter lines on the actual election day.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Gay and bisexual men will no longer be discriminated against in blood donation by the FDA. The Food and Drug Administration finalized new guidelines for donating blood that brings the U.S. more in line with countries like Canada and the U.K. The ban on gay and bisexual men donating blood began during the AIDS epidemic and has been gradually eased off for decades since. Now, the FDA will use a uniform individual risk assessment survey for people who want to donate blood, regardless of their sexual orientation. Prospective donors will not be allowed to donate if they have had a new sexual partner or more than one sexual partner in the past 3 months or anal sex in the past 3 months. People who are taking medications to treat or prevent HIV infection will also not now be ineligible to donate because those drugs can delay the detection of HIV. These restrictions will still exclude people, but will allow others to donate who would have otherwise been banned for being gay or bisexual. Peter Marks is the director of the FDA Center for Biologics Evolution and Research. Evaluation and Research. He said, quote, implementation of these recommendations will represent a significant milestone for agency and the LGBTQI plus community, end quote.
You are jamming with the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sona Lee. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather forecast is going to be clear with a low of 54. Tomorrow, the heat is on, sunny and hot with highs right around 90. Today in history, in 1925, American baseball catcher Yogi Berra was born. He was an 18-time All-Star and a 10-time World Series champion. The quote of the day is from Berra, who said, quote, always go to other people's funerals. Otherwise, they won't come to yours.
The Department of the Interior's Commission on Missing and Murdered Indigenous People met for the third hearing in Arizona this week. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A federal commission held a hearing this week in northern Arizona as part of a national effort to address missing and murdered indigenous people. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports.
The Not Invisible Act Commission met near Flagstaff for the third in a series of hearings throughout the U.S. Members were appointed by the Departments of the Interior and Justice. They heard emotional testimony from family members of missing and murdered indigenous people, along with tribal law enforcement and victims and family service providers. Navajo Nation Council Delegate Amber Canisbach-Crotty is a member of the commission.
What I want to see from the commission is federal partners either recognize that they play a part in this or to provide that funding so the nations can do that work themselves.
The commission heard recommendations for how to better coordinate responses to missing persons cases and provide better communication and funding for family and victim assistance on tribal lands. Those who testified also called for more accountability of public officials in solving missing persons and murder cases. The 2019 Not Invisible Act was sponsored by then-Representative Deb Holland, who now serves as Interior Secretary. The commission will develop recommendations and submit a report to Holland, Attorney General Merrick Garland, and Congress. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
More mines are being proposed in the western U.S. to provide metals for the expected growth in electric vehicles, also for large storage batteries, for power generation, and other high-tech products aimed at reducing climate change. The Nez Perce tribe is worried about one of those mines proposed for central Idaho. Chuck Kornbach of Station WUWM reports.
Perpetua Resources wants to develop an open-pit gold and antimony mine at a former mining site near a fork of the Salmon River. Antimony is used in solar panels and is expected to have a big future in battery storage units near solar and wind farms. Perpetua spokesperson Mackenzie Lyon says what her company calls the Stibnite Project would be a source of metals now often brought in from overseas.
The most important thing we can do is bring mineral production home, because when it is home, they are impacts that we can control here, we can regulate, moderate, and have oversight of.
But environmental groups are raising concerns about the Stibnite proposal. So is the Nez Perce tribe, as the tribe has treaty-reserved rights and natural resources, cultural resources, and sacred sites in the area. Shannon Wheeler is tribal vice chairman.
Tatsbewi, good morning to everyone. Appreciate you being here.
Wheeler recently met with about 50 members of the Society of Environmental Journalists to talk about his concerns with the Stibnite Project, the main one being the fate of endangered salmon that return from the Pacific Ocean to Idaho waters to spawn.
Generally, they're five-year-old fish that are coming back to that area, and so it's truly important that we keep that water as clean and cold and as fresh as possible for them because, you know, they have a gauntlet to go through. They have dams, reservoirs, predation.
Perpetua hopes to be granted a mining permit in the next year or so and open the Stibnite mine within 4 years. I'm Chuck Quirnbach.
The Federation of Sovereign Indian Nations is calling for cultural sensitivity training in all areas of sports after an ESPN broadcaster mocked an indigenous hockey player's name. Anchor John Anderson compared Zach Whitecloud's name to toilet paper Monday night, then later apologized to the Golden Knights player. First Nations leaders applauded the apology but said the training is needed. Whitecloud accepted the apology, telling reporters he's proud of his culture and that this is something the anchor and others can learn from. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Legislation designed to simplify the college financial aid process could have a negative effect on some farm families. In 2020, Congress passed the Free Application for Federal Student Aid, or FAFSA, Simplification Act. It benefits the majority of U.S. families, but it also eliminates a unique formula used to determine farm income. That could prevent more rural students from attending college. Now a bipartisan group of lawmakers in Congress is trying to fix the problem. Ros Brown has more on the story in Texas.
Texas educates more rural students than any other state, nearly 700,000. And there's concern a new law meant to simplify applying for college financial aid could make it more difficult for farm kids to attend. In 2020, Congress passed the FAFSA Simplification Act, a formula used to determine how much financial aid students can receive. It eliminated a long-standing provision for how farm families determine income, excluding non-liquid farm assets such as farmland, equipment, storage structures, and more. Without a fix, Open Campus journalist Nick Ferrizzo says college could be out of reach for a whole generation of farm-raised kids.
If you had a family farm, you didn't have to calculate the net worth of the farm because a family farm isn't something you can just piece up and sell when it's time to go to college. Maybe if it was a stock, you could sell it, but you can't sell the auger that you're using to make a living as a family farm.
A bipartisan group of U.S. senators led by Iowa's Joni Ernst has introduced a bill to restore the exemption. Last year, the average farm family was expected to contribute around $8,000 to their college students' tuition. That figure would climb to $41,000 next year, according to an Iowa College Student Aid Commission study. Ferrizzo says rural students graduate from high school at higher rates than those in urban areas, but are less likely to obtain a 2 or 4 year college degree, and that population doesn't need more barriers to attending post-secondary education.
So you add something like this, which could greatly, greatly increase the actual cost that they're bearing and their inability to access certain scholarships and resources, and I mean, it could make a huge difference.
It's estimated more than 85% of college students, or almost 18 million, currently receive some type of financial aid. For Texas News Service, I'm Roz Brown.
A new law in California allows people to seek expungement of their criminal records. Advocates say Senate Bill 731 gives people who have paid their dues a clean slate. The first people to seek expungement will be going before a court today. Suzanne Potter has the details.
The first people to make use of a new state law on sealing criminal records are set to go before a judge today. Previously, only people whose conviction did not result in incarceration could petition for expungement. Jay Jordan is CEO of the nonprofit Alliance for Safety and Justice. He will ask a judge in Stockton to seal his decades-old robbery conviction and adds that Senate Bill 731 will give people who have paid their dues a clean slate.
If you have a conviction in the state of California and it did result in a prison term and you finish probation or parole and have been crime-free for 2 or 3 years, then you can petition the court for an expungement.
If your conviction did not lead to time behind bars and you meet those same criteria, the state of California will now automatically expunge your record. 7 other people will also petition the court for expungement today. A felony conviction can be a big obstacle when people try to find a job, rent an apartment, adopt a child, or even chaperone a school field trip. A recent federal budget agreement included $95 million to help states expunge criminal records. Jordan says it's in everyone's best interest to help formerly incarcerated people rebuild their lives.
Upwards of 92% of people who have records have already served their time, are over the age of 35, and have been removed from the criminal justice system 5 to 7 years. And so by all accounts, they are not recidivating, either mothers, fathers. So expungement is public safety, it is economic development, and it's really about families.
Under the new law, sex offenders cannot apply for an expungement. And law enforcement, government, schools, and agencies that deal with vulnerable populations can still see people's criminal records. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
A new report from Georgetown University looks at ways young people can get good-paying jobs. A program in Idaho is helping put people on these employment pathways. Eric Tegedoff reports.
A new report explores the pathway young people can take to land good-paying jobs. A popular program in Idaho is helping young people with this goal. The Georgetown University Center on Education and the Workforce looked at 10 pathway changes that increase people's chances of getting a good job before the age of 30. While there's standard advice like getting a bachelor's degree, the report also suggests entering other types of programs by age 22. Matthew Patzcash with the Idaho Department of Labor says Idaho Launch is helping young people do that.
Folks who want to go into the trades, go into stuff that requires perhaps just a certificate program, which may still cost money up front to enroll into or to buy necessary tools and equipment for. This helps to ease that burden and to lower those barriers.
The legislature expanded the Idaho Launch Workforce Training Program this year. By 2024, it will provide high school graduates up to $8,000 to attend community college or pursue a certificate program. Georgetown University research professor and report co-author Zach Mabel says bachelor's degrees are still the best pathway to increase people's earnings in young adulthood, noting their chances increase by 20% if they are on the path to a bachelor's by age 22. But he also notes that this isn't the only path.
While it is true that the ticket to a good job is punched the most when you're pursuing a bachelor's degree, there are lots of other ways of increasing the opportunities for individuals who don't choose to go down that pathway.
Mabel says there are greater hurdles to high-paying jobs for women and people of color. He says reducing barriers to education and training is only part of the work to ensure greater equity in the workforce.
At the same time, there really needs to be a concerted effort to break down and address the other systemic obstacles that really stand in the way of people being able to secure high-quality jobs.
Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Department of Energy wants to help 5 million homes connect to community solar by 2025. Community solar programs can help people access clean energy even when their own roofs aren't suitable for solar panels. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Going solar can reduce people's energy costs and their impact on the climate. But not everyone's home is well suited for rooftop solar panels, so community solar programs provide another option. In these programs, multiple community members buy or lease part of a solar farm and then share the benefits.
50% of households and 50% of businesses cannot put solar on their rooftops today, and that's why community solar is so important, to really make the benefits of clean energy more accessible to everyone.
Nicole Steele is with the U.S. Department of Energy. She says the agency set a goal of helping 5 million homes connect to community solar by 2025.
It's audacious. It's a 700% increase over where it was in just a four-year time frame.
But Steele says the goal is reachable. To achieve it, the DOE launched the National Community Solar Partnership. It offers technical assistance, peer-to-peer networking, and other support to solar developers, utilities, governments, and others. By sharing knowledge and resources, partners hope to rapidly expand access to solar energy.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 12th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips and ideas at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Tikte Kapura. The producer is the effervescent Althea Billings, and our engineer is Laura Miller. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Eric Tegedoff, Roz Brown, Suzanne Potter, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Michelle Coppola.
And I'm Danny Shy. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, USA Today reported that, quote, as it heads into the final stretch of its current term, the Supreme Court is on defense following a series of revelations about gifts, property sales, and disclosure, close quote. That, you might say, is putting it mildly. The recent revelations are not about trinkets, but millions of dollars worth of benefits, vacations, jobs, and